overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Happy Father's Day. We're just getting started here at the center and people are still meandering in. It's hard to herd cats, they say, but humans are even harder. But that's okay. So this is a very significant weekend. We had a national holiday declared just a day or so ago called Juneteenth. And it's long overdue, where we get to celebrate the freedom of a large part of our community from slavery. And I saw a lady, I think her name was Opal Lee, this 94-year-old lady. The president got on his knees and he held his hand in her hand and told her how proud he was to be declaring a country that's free for all people, not just July 4th. But so we have this new holiday on the planet. And then today happens to be Father's Day. And I can't help but every time it is Father's Day, I think of my own father, my personal father. But I also think of the contextual father, the father within that doeth the work that Jesus would speak about. You know, Jesus was the great example, and we want to make him the great exception. But what he would say, and the word father that he would use in Aramaic was the word Abba. And Abba means beloved one. So it's not necessarily his father, because his father was Joseph. But he awoke to this realization that if you've seen me, he says, you've seen the Father. In other words, you've seen the Beloved. He says, it's the Father within that doeth the work. I of myself do nothing. So he recognized that this Beloved something, this presence within, is what does the work. One of the greatest realizations that I've had in my 72 years on this planet is that I really don't do anything. I am a conduit through which Spirit expresses. And on a good day, it's clear, it's meaningful, and it's heart-filled. On not such a good day, there's too much of me involved in it. There's too much of the somebody there. But when I get out of the way, this something that we all share, we'll call it the Beloved, or the Father within. And then Jesus, when he said, when you pray, and he used an example, our Father, who art in heaven. Now, he wasn't talking about this man in the sky. He was talking about this Beloved presence that exists within all of us. And it's in that consciousness called heaven. Heaven as a state of consciousness. Dr. Ernest Holmes said, keep your conversation in heaven. Now, he wasn't talking about having your conversation up there. He was saying, have your conversation in that sacred place within you where it's not about you, where you realize that you are this presence revealing itself on the planet. Now, I have so many fathers that have impacted my life. Spiritual fathers, most of them. Ralph Waldo Emerson was one of my spiritual fathers. You know, he's the one that said, dare to be an individual. He said, consistency and conformity are the hobgoblin of little minds and the divine of statesmen. So he says, beware when the universe unleashes an original thinker, not a carbon copy. So what if this beloved presence wants to be uniquely, magically expressing through all creation, and you are that creation, and so am I. Now, Dr. Ernest Holmes was the founder of this teaching called The Science of Mind, and he was an individual who said, we embrace all teachings and exclude none. And he was a synthesizer. He was not an eliminator. He would say that this divine truth revealed itself uniquely through all the great spiritual paths and in many other ways. And so I pulled out his 365 days of Science of Mind, and I've been reading it for quite a while, and I tried to find one of his prayers, because he is the father of this teaching, that I think says it all about the presence that we're calling the Father here, which exists within you and me. You know, it's not about a genetic thing. It's not about procreating and having children, because I think of all of you as my children. But then again, I think of all my plants as my children. I think of the butterflies as my children. I think of the four leggeds as my children. Gigi gave me a pillow that said, my kids have paws. And I know she was thinking of me. So let's see what Dr. Ernest Holmes talks about this father within in a very sweet sort of way. He says, the divine presence within me is my authority. And he says, this divine presence within each one of us is both the center and the circumference of our real being. It is the infinite presence that inhabits eternity and finds a dwelling place in our own consciousness. That's how we manifest, through consciousness. We're spiritual beings having a human experience. When the consciousness embraces a greater reality, we begin to manifest that reality as our experience. He goes on to explain it. We recognize it, with a capital I, as the only authority there is, this presence. We know that we are one with it and we are in it, for there is no separation from it. It's a phrase called panentheism. It's like the drop is in the ocean and the ocean is in the drop. We're in God and God is in us and God's all around us. So he said, our own consciousness is the very depth and height of its beingness and is one with all that it is. One with all that it is. It's everywhere. There's no spot where God is not. Could we have a big enough emptiness in our mind to embrace something that's so beyond thought and the finite knowing? He's asking us to. He says there is an infinite self-knowingness. This is the divine knowing itself through you and me. There is an infinite self-knowingness which we call spirit, and it is ruled by law and it is impelled by love. Now, this is the whole teaching of science of mind. The law makes the way possible, but the love leads the way, impelled by love. So what if we could identify with the divine heart, where the love comes from, and let thoughts be in service to that love? He's taking us there. Each of us is an individual center in this without being an individual separate from it. Huh. We're not separate from this power. We are rooted in the one, which produces limitless variety. There's that diversity again. Therefore, God is uniquely individual and uniquely personal to each one of us in the fire of our own aliveness. I'm speaking today about the fire of aliveness, which is the fire that comes from within your soul. The fire is the spirit within you that dances, that creates. When it moves through the intellect, it is genius. When it moves through the heart, it is compassion. Could we find that spark of our own divinity, he's asking, in the fire of our aliveness? We are not one in God or one with God, but we are one of God. I'll say that again. Don't separate God from you. We are not one in God or one with God. That would be duality, but we are one of God. All there is God. And you're that beautiful God self shining through. You have to be so humble to say that. So, he said, let us keep our thoughts turned on this divine presence, tuned into this divine presence. So it's not my thoughts, but the thought of the universe shining through. Always reminding me, as Jody does, that life is perfect just as it is. And you know how it is? Because it is. And then when life shows you something that's uncomfortable, you don't get in the reactive self. You see that this fire of aliveness is meeting the fire of circumstance. And sometimes the circumstances are untenable. And that's what I'm going to be speaking about today. The fire of aliveness meeting the fire of circumstances. And this is what the dance of life's all about. He said, let us keep our thoughts tuned into the divine presence within us and within one another. And then deeply desiring that we become more aware of the love that we have for one another and the love that we have for our world. May this consciousness be opened then to a deeper understanding of life as we reveal the light of the life that we all are. I saw on PBS last night that in Dubai, this big Arab country with all the oil wells, they have these very rare tortoises that are becoming extinct. And so there are well-meaning people that are out there rescuing and saving the little tortoises when they breed. Then I saw House Hunters International, and they were Acamal in Mexico. Same situation. They have the little tortoises that are laying their eggs on the beach, and well-meaning souls are filled with the fire of aliveness, saying, if it happens to the baby turtle, it happens to me. Could we love our world enough that we care about even something as small and as humble as a turtle? These ancient, ancient souls that are here for us to be stewards of. So yes, this month I'm talking about the big reveal. I've watched probably too much RuPaul's drag show, but the big reveal is where we show you who I really am. We take off the masks and this is what I am. And you know, it's funny, in our service before we come in here in the sanctuary, we call it a revealing service, not a healing service. And the reason we call it a revealing service is Ernest Holmes, again, the founder of Science of Mind, said, there is truly nothing to heal. There is only the wholeness that is hidden within us to be revealed. So what if what we're doing is we're taking away the mask of illusion, the mask of dysfunction, the mask of suffering and struggle and false identity, and we're revealing this imprisoned splendor, this wholeness of our being, this hidden wholeness, it's already there. You know, Terry Girl was reminding me in our satsang on Wednesday night, she had a flash of when she was maybe 4 years old, before her local self, her somebody, she got this flash of remembrance of when she was the spaciousness, when she was one with everything. I was doing a prayer with my prayer partner in Vancouver, and he starts the prayer, I finish the prayer, and I must have taken him to a place of spacious oneness because he had tears in his eyes at the end of the prayer and said, you just took me to a memory that I forgot that I had when I was four and I was one with everything. I wasn't me, Terry Shea, the separate individual with thoughts and beliefs and goals and dreams. I was that spacious nothing that was everything. And he said, I had a glimpse of it. So what if that's the possibility, that we get a glimpse of the divine and it reveals itself to us uniquely in our own way? So the first week I talked about the pull of the universe. The pull of the universe. There is something that is longing for expression, and that's the divine longing for itself in each one of us. Now, if you're crazy like me, it's a creative longing. It's a longing to be more of what we are. My little boy was a dancer and longed to express his dance, not because I wanted to be a perfect dancer, but because my body felt the presence moving through it in unique ways that were appropriate for this life form. Could we be courageous enough to say, where is the universe pulling me? Gigi is a karma yoga. Her pull is to serve. Isn't that beautiful? I'm more of a jnana yoga. My pull is to understand with the mind, or really with the soul, to develop a sense of gnosis or a knowing that's beyond knowledge or information. So the pull of the universe is always there, and it's the pull to belong. Last week, I talked about always part of something larger. We're part of something larger. Kabir Helminski's written a new book called The House of Remembering. And it's the story of the Sufis and how the Sufis have what they call dervishes. We could call ourselves dervishes. They are the human that lives between the threshold of heaven and earth. And a dervish, their whole purpose is to spend their life in remembrance that everything is Allah, that everything is God. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God. That this divine presence, Allah, is closer to us than our jugular vein. It's the breath within the breath. I am remembering who I am. It's just about remembering and forgetting. Sometimes we forget that all there is God, and if all there is God, well, then it must find an outlet through its creation, and we are that. It says in the 8th Psalm, what is man that thou art mindful of him? Thou hast created him a little lower than the angels, and hath crowned him with honor and glory. And what that says to my humble soul is that we are here to honor this presence and glorify it by allowing it to express through our lives, through our creativity, through our altruism, through our wisdom, through our intellect, not accepting limited, crazy, stupid ideas, but really wanting divine. And so in this being always associated with something larger, in Kabir's lovely book, The House of Remembering, he says, we have to move it out of content into context. Now, for those of you who are left-brained, the content would be me, my belief system, my religions, my story, my dream. The context is that field of awareness in which all of that arises. You want to get another metaphor? The content would be the drops in the ocean. The context would be the ocean. And so what happens when a drop awakens to its true nature as the ocean? It's not Kavi the drop over there. It's Kavi the ocean coming through the drop called Kavi. Wow. And then we see it's the ocean of love that sees the ocean of love out there. If you're seeing separation, if you're seeing limited ideas, Charlotte, if you're judging them, it's the part of you that's seeing your own limited self. And we project a lot of our own unhealed stuff out in the world. So what if when this something larger starts to awaken within us? Eckhart Tolle calls it the no mind. And what we do so much in our prayer here at the Center for Spiritual Living is move out of the local mind that has ideas and opinions and judgments and preferences. We move out of that local mind into the non-local mind. The non-local mind doesn't want X, Y, or Z. It doesn't tell you how to think or what to do. It just bees. It's the beingness, the being of open-heartedness that comes through our awareness and that doesn't call things good or bad. That's where we fall from grace. That's that beautiful story at the very beginning of the Bible. Remember, the Bible's a storybook, and they're mostly allegories and metaphors. And the story of Adam and Eve was when we eat from the tree of judgment, we can no longer be in the garden. The garden represents a consciousness of wholeness. And if we start saying this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad, then we're automatically cast out from a consciousness where everything is potentially the divine revealing itself, even the stuff that we're uncomfortable with. So this week, I'm launching into, and you know, when I write these talks out months in advance, they begin to work on me subconsciously. Jody knows what's that all. She's going to be speaking when I'm in Maine, and she picked her subject. She says, I want to talk about the freedom in death. And I met Jody when her friend died, and that's how I met. And we've been very close ever since in what doesn't die. What dies is the form, but what we are is eternal life. So when we begin to know ourselves, then those who may have made their transition, they're still here. They're just not in form. You know, I've got this very old dog, Bert, and he's getting close to transitioning. And Jody and I have been speaking a lot about him. And she's suggested that maybe when I go to Maine, because his human isn't there for him to take care of, that he might just lie down and enter into the light, as Gigi would say. I know that his lover, baby Speck, is there with him. I just feel her presence. And so he's hanging in there to take care of his human because, you know, animals have a job that they're here to do. After baby Speck made her transition, someone gave me a book called Soul Contracts. And it said every animal that we have in our lives, whether it's domestic or even wild, have a soul contract with their human that they're in the life form with. And they are here without exception to teach each one of us this unconditional love. Boy, is Bert a big teacher for me. And you know, my Zen calendar the other week was all about Taoism, the teachings of Taoism. And it was so relevant to Bert. It says, in Taoism, it's all about simplicity, patience, and compassion. Life with Bert is the simplicity of having a bowel movement and not peeing on himself in the morning. The simplicity of getting him to eat something and drink his water. The patience to walk him when he can barely walk and when he collapses to pick him up. The patience to every moment with him is a lesson in patience. When he can't climb the stairs and I try to situate him where he can put his front paw on the step so that I can then lift him up the 3 or 4 or 5 steps to the top step. And then the compassion to not get short with him. He's very slow right now. To talk sweet to him when he had 2 big poops this morning. We put a diaper on him, the diaper fell off, the poopster said, I know, you didn't mean to do the poop, it's okay. And so I tell him he's not a bad boy, and then I take him out and I wash him down with soap at 5 in the morning, and then I rinse him off, and then I towel him down. And so what if life gives you these, what do they call it, fire of circumstance, and we get to bring the fire of aliveness, because he still is alive. So Mark Nepo wrote a beautiful article for Spirituality and Health all about the fire of aliveness. And at the end of the article, this is what he said. He says, it's humbling but true. He says, the fire of aliveness is living with the fire of circumstance. And we lead between the kindling of our dreams and the fire of life. Oftentimes confused, we often think that the dream is where we're going. And so we miss the majesty of what the dream ignites. Sometimes the dream has to burn away. You know, anybody been in a relationship that you thought was going to be the be-all and end-all, only to find that the relationship burned away and it brought you to yourself and it ended up being a blessing, not a curse? So sometimes the dream has to burn up, he says. But just how do we make good use of our heart and get the strength that we need? And he says, this is a lifelong practice. As John Keats advised, we need beauty and we need truth to make it through our life. And he says, and I would add love. He says, truth helps us douse the fire of the circumstance. When you can look at the circumstance and it's on fire and you can douse it with the truth that it's really not about them, it's about me, right? They didn't do it to me. The truth will set you free. So the truth faces the circumstance. And then he said, with beauty, it helps keep us the fire of aliveness lit. The beauty of your soul, having the courage to do what you need to do in the moment that you need to do it. That's the fire of aliveness, facing the fire of circumstance. And he says, love helps us discern between the two. Love, beauty, and truth. I started thinking about different people who have inspired me in that little formula. And the first one was Opal Lee, the lady on Juneteenth, who the fire of circumstance would have been slavery. The fire of truth is that we're free now and we get to celebrate that truth. There's beauty in the celebration of that truth. I thought about Rosa Parks. The fire of circumstance says you need to move to the back of the bus. But she had the fire of aliveness to say to them, I'm going to sit here, right here in the front. Thank you very much. The fire of aliveness met the fire of circumstance. I thought of Nelson Mandela. The fire of circumstance threw him in Robben Island, a prison, for 27 years. But the fire of aliveness had him define that as the university. He didn't call it a prison. And those that were incarcerated with him, he carried with them this vibration, keeping his conversation in heaven. So when he was liberated 27 years later, he became the president of South Africa and worked on reconciliation, not revenge. The fire of aliveness meeting the fire of circumstance. I thought of Gandhi. And if you've seen the movie Gandhi, a nonviolent revolution in India went from being a colony of Great Britain to being autonomous, a democracy. And he says, I am not, the fire of aliveness said, I am not against the British rule. I am for the independence of the Indian people. So he meant the fire of circumstance, the bondage in his country under a colonized abusive system of England, to the fire of aliveness where he stood for the freedom of the Indian people. He was assassinated, by the way, and his last words were Ram, 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 Ram. Even his last words were the name of God. I thought of Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote Hamilton on Broadway. There is a new musical, and Elise, you would love this. It's called In the Heights, and it's about his culture, the Latina culture in New York City, Washington Heights. I used to live in Manhattan. It's by the Washington Bridge, and it's so amazing because the fire of circumstance would be all these basically orphan kids from Cuba, from Dominican Republic, from Puerto Rico. They all spoke Spanish, but they were a hodgepodge, a melting pot of different people in this culture where they came alive in music and song. And the abuela, the grandmother, she wasn't the physical abuela of all of them. She was the spiritual abuela of all of them. Like I'm the spiritual abuela here. And the abuela sang a song about patience and faith. The two words are what, Raul?
Paciencia.
Paciencia.
Y fe.
Y fe. Paciencia y fe, one of the most beautiful songs. I told my little sister, because she teaches two languages, she teaches German, Spanish in the school systems, and she watched it that night and she said she felt like she was home with her community. And so what was beautiful, in the story, there's a young, beautiful girl who was raised in Washington Heights, and they said, you can do better than this. You can leave the barrio and you can get a college education. So she's beautiful, she's smart, she gets a scholarship to Stanford University out on the West Coast, and she's there for 1 year, and she comes back. And everybody said, oh, we're so proud of you. She said, she took the fire of her aliveness and the fire of the circumstance. She said, it is not my home. I felt judged there. I didn't feel accepted. And she said, here in Washington Heights, you want me to go out and be something other than what I am, but I choose to come home and let my light shine within my own community. So she took their dream, and their dream burned up so she could have her own dream of coming home, like a little young lady that I know has come home to us from Texas, where she gets to live her dream in this space. So it's a beautiful, beautiful music. And then Trey's been out of town for 4 days, and I saw this documentary series on Showtime, and it was called The Kingdom of Silence. Did anybody see The Kingdom of Silence? It's the story of Jamal Khashoggi. And it starts off with an insurrection. It's called Arab Spring. And it shows all these young truth speakers that were standing up to the abusive government at the time, just like it was in 1971. Oh, there's also a movie called 1971. Did anybody see that? So powerful. It starts off 1971. I digress. 1971, the Kent State shootings. I was in college at the time. The National Guard went to Kent State when they were protesting the Vietnam War, and they shot and killed many of the Kent State students because they were quietly protesting against a war. This was the fire of aliveness, speaking up to the fire of circumstances. An immoral war, the Vietnam War. We were living through it, and so many of my peers were dying. So in this movie, 1971, the first song came out, and it was Marvin Gaye. What's going on? What's going on? We must bring people, all this killing on the planet. Bring some love in here today. You know, and so you realized how the musicians were bringing their fire of aliveness to the consciousness, and we were all singing, what's going on? What's going on? And then John Lennon and Yoko Ono, imagine no religion. I wonder if you can. No people to die for, the brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer. And so the fire of aliveness was facing the ignorance and the fire of the circumstances in 1971. And I lived through that, and you lived through that. I was coming home from church last week, and there's a corner on Whitesburg and Airport Road where a man stands out there and holds these big signs that abortioners are murderers. And every week I see that, he's waving the sign. But last week he had a different one. He said, celebrate LGBT week. And then he had a big explosion. And I thought, we have some more work to do here. So could the fire of aliveness meet the fire of circumstance and speak the truth to that? So I'm watching The Kingdom of Silence. And Gigi can relate to this. When good people say nothing, bad things happen. And things were happening in Saudi Arabia. Remember, we had 9/11. Jamal Khashoggi was very aware of what the Al-Qaeda, or whoever it was, were instigating that. And he was one of the good reporters who was reporting the truth at the time. Well, you know, some countries don't want the truth to be spoken in the press. They would rather oppress the press, so to speak. And so when the Arab Spring came and over 500 students were killed, Jamal Khashoggi stood up for the students. And I went online and let me give you a few of his sayings, because we know what happened to him. He was murdered by the country. They dismembered his body. They brought it out in bags. It's never been found. But they have the tape recordings of the murder in the embassy in Istanbul. And so his big message was, I wrote it down, see if I can read it. He says, there is a new generation, and we must take freedom, a freedom that is already alive within us. This is what he's telling these young people. And with the call for emancipation, may my words ignite your soul, he said. And so even though he may not be here in form, the fire of his aliveness are still speaking out, though he's been passed for many years. So here's what he said. He said, I've left my home. Remember, he was exiled to America. His colleagues were thrown in prison. So he fled to America so that he could still speak the truth. I have left my home, and he was heartbroken. I've left my family, his wife and his children. I've left my job, and I am now raising my voice, the voice of truth. To do otherwise would be to betray those who languish in prison as I speak. So I can speak today when so many cannot speak. Could we be the voice that speaks the truth to power? You know, little Greta Thunberg is going around the planet trying to save the planet. And she says, don't listen to me. She says, listen to the science. And then she tells you the science of what we're doing to this planet. So could we be a voice that is a voice for change in the world? Jamal Khashoggi. He said, repression and intimidation are not and never should be the acceptable companions to reform. Repression and intimidation are not and never should be the acceptable companions of reform. We're not here to repress people who want to think for themselves. I heard on the news that the Catholic Church might deny anybody who is pro-choice the communion. Just because they have a thought of their own, that they're, you know, could we not be a culture that wants to condemn others and intimidate them? He says the Arab Spring, and this is the state about what all those young people died. The Arab Spring is a true phenomenon. Embrace Arab Spring. He was telling this to the young people before they got killed. Embrace the Arab Spring and embrace the aspirations for your freedom, for your people in Egypt and in Syria and in Yemen. Are we so far removed from when we used to want to be a country that was all about freedom and about liberation and about speaking our truth? You know, we're a spiritual teaching that isn't your traditional religion. And we've been given the freedom to express this truth, where we can say it's really not about Jesus, it's about the cosmic Christ. Right. And I love my friend Richard Rohr, who said the cosmic Christ existed before the elephants did. I mean, the dinosaurs did. It's a state of consciousness that's within all of us. Could we get intimate with that and dare to talk about it, even though it's controversial? The last Khashoggi quote is this. I don't want to be a dissident, but in the same time, I don't want to go back home and have to be silent again. And so he went to New York City, he went to the Washington Post, and he spoke the truth, a truth that got him assassinated. He said, I just want to be a free writer, and I think I am serving my country the best and my people the best by providing an independent narrative that speaks the truth to a power system that doesn't appreciate that truth. So in this great reveal that we're talking about this month, what is it that wants to be revealed through you? What is it that you care passionately enough? I know my friend Tia cares passionately about a lot of things. She just went to a family reunion and preached the gospel of plastic straws, I believe, she said, to the world. Yeah. So I wanted to close with Richard Rohr, who is this Franciscan monk who speaks the truth to the Catholic Church. Raul and I are wondering how he's still in there. My prayer partner, who was amongst us, I still don't understand how they haven't gotten onto what this guy's talking about, because he's basically turning the temples in an institution and in an organization to help evolve them with the fire of his aliveness under the fire of the circumstances of the Catholic Church. Al knows what I mean. So here's a little taste of Richard Rohr. He says, God is a riverbed of mercy that underlies all the ephemeral flotsam and jetsam of your life. So among the details of our existence, there is this space that is holding all of that. And that's what he calls God. This riverbed is vast, it's silent, it's restful, it's resourceful, and it receives and it also releases all the comings and goings. It's an inlet and an outlet for this divine presence. Kind of feel into the truth, because the truth can't be conceptualized, but it can be known through a felt awareness. So he says, this riverbed is vast, restful, resourceful, receives and releases all the comings and goings, and it is awareness itself, as opposed to judgment and thinking. This something that is revealing itself is pure, open-hearted awareness that comes through all of us. It precedes all thought. Could we rest in the spaciousness of that? That's why we meditate, Terry Boy, just to stop and touch that space. Wow, it's not a complicated thing. You can just exhale. It's right there. It never went anywhere. It refuses to be pulled into the emotional and into the mental tug of war that forms most of our human existence. This space doesn't care about right or wrong or you or me or this or that. It just is. It exists. So to look out from this untouchable silence, to let it be your perception, to look out from this untouchable silence is to live from your soul space, where God dwells most generously. To live from your soul. So there is Brahman, which is this infinite, creative, invisible essence, the all that is. And then there is the Atman, which is the individualized opening through which Brahman expresses. And then, as it says at Dr. Ernest Holmes, the Atman and the Brahman are one. So could we know ourselves as that beautiful presence that doesn't know other, because there's only one here? Could we know ourselves as this beautiful presence that sees wholeness, whereas other people might see discord and problems? And when we see through those eyes, we're manifesting a whole new world, because we're bringing a new dream forward. Imagine no religion, I wonder if you can. So, Teresa of Avila says, I myself can come up with nothing as magnificent as the beauty and the amplitude of a soul. The fact that the soul is made in God's image means that it is very difficult for us to understand its sublime dignity and loveliness. Far too many humans suffer from a negative self-image when an entirely positive one has been given to them for free in the fire of their own aliveness. There is this presence within us. And lastly, he goes on to say, no wonder the Spirit is described as a flowing water, John, the Apostle John, as a spring inside you, also John. It's the river of life, Ezekiel. Your life is not really about you. Rather, you are a part of a much larger dynamic flow called life itself. Life itself flowing out in expression through each one of us in its own alive sort of way. So, you know, when I play on in this field of the pondering the impossible, the imponderable, you know, to embrace something that is so vast and yet so intimate, it kind of does a number on you. He has a phrase, he says, we're Godded. God is doing us. You know, this spaciousness. In our satsangs on Wednesday night, it was so beautiful. We used the talking stick and we ran around the room. And without exception, people were speaking from that space. Glory G and I looked at each other. I think the first person that spoke, kind of a disturbed man, when he took the talking stick, he said, sometimes I go within and I have this realization that I'm life eternal. That's all he had to say, that I'm life eternal. Then someone else took the talking stick and said, I find myself moving out of my mind that's always talking about things, and I'm curious because there's something behind that mind that's always there. They're experiencing that fire of their own aliveness of their soul once their mind quiets down. And so as the stick moved around the room, it's as if we were giving birth to this something that wanted to come out from hiding. Come out wherever you are, right? And discover that this is the life that's been waiting for you. And we begin to see it clearly now that our mind is no longer directing the show. In our prayer treatment this morning, Terry Shea reminded me that we're not really the mind. What we are is the heart of the universe. Because the heart of the universe knows oneness. So when we step out of the local mind that has concepts and beliefs and preferences and opinions and judgments and all the kind of stuff that the mind is very good at, it has strategies, it has dreams, it has ambitions, it has goals, it has attachments, it has expectations, you name it. But it's also the realm of suffering. So when you move into the heart of the one, it just opens to the little turtles that need to be rescued. My friend Marie has gotten herself a new little swing that she's got swinging from under a tree. And she's been having challenges with her mind because it doesn't work the way it should. But I said, maybe that's grace. Because now as she sits on the swing, she hears the birds sing. And she starts to whistle back to them. She's having an intimate relationship with the birds. And then she looks at the trees that are around her and she feels the heart of the trees. Well, it's because her heart is open. And when the window of the heart is open, says Rumi, then love can flow from heart to heart. And he says, if there's no wall between us, then what need is there of a window? Jody stopped by yesterday to see old Bert. He was lying on the front porch. And you know, he managed to lift his head. And she's his spiritual mama, and she put her head down to his, and he looked up at her with those big brown eyes, and he gave her a kiss. And she says, oh, you gave me a kiss. Well, of course I gave you a kiss, because you're my mama. You'll give her another kiss. What if it's as simple as having an intimate relationship with another human being, that we're not separate? this man who walks his dog. You know, I'm thinking of Father's Day, and he walked his dog, and he had a dog named Luna, and she was very, very old. And he and his wife went to the beach for a vacation, and they put Luna in a kennel where she would stay. The whole time they were gone at the beach, Luna didn't eat, and she was very old. And when he came back from the vacation, they said, well, this dog hasn't eaten in a week, and she's really old. We'd suggest you put her down. And he says, I remember when we injected the needle in, I said, I shouldn't be doing this. She just didn't eat. And so we made the assumption that it's time for her to go because she didn't eat. And so he shared that with me. He said it was one of the saddest moments of my life. This Wednesday, the young man came to fix the air conditioner that didn't work. And he was a chatty little Kathy. And so I'm out there, he's showing me what went wrong with the air conditioner, and he knows all this technical stuff about machines. And he says, yeah, my dad taught it to me. He said, I'm a real daddy's boy. He says, my daddy was in the military, he's retired military, but he was the kind of guy that could take things apart and put them together. And as a little boy, I had this curiosity. And he says, you know, my mom and dad got married, it didn't work out, they split, and I ended up living with my dad. But then my dad died when I was 17, and I ended up living with my mom, and we healed all the mom stuff. He says, but I'll always be a daddy's boy. You know, he says, because I wouldn't be doing what I do if it weren't for my dad and his curiosity about machines and all this sort of stuff. And I said, well, you do know that your dad is still with you, don't you? And there's this pregnant pause. He says, yeah, I feel him all the time. I said, that's because he never went anywhere. His spirit is still with you. And I said, are you a dad? And he says, well, not really. He says, my girlfriend and I, we split up. You know, he said it was really a dysfunctional relationship. And I had the courage to say, this relationship is killing me. Enough is enough. And he said, I felt so liberated. And they had two dogs. And he said, well, I let her keep the dogs for now because, you know, but he said, I feel so free being liberated. And he said his sister has a little girl, and the sister doesn't have a husband, and so the little girl doesn't have a father. So he says, she's like my daughter. And so he says, I pick her up every day, we play. And he says, I may not be a physical father, but I feel I have a spiritual daughter. So what if in this dynamic that we all get to create a unique playground of belonging to the universe, of belonging to the universe. Jack Kornfield was on the Zen calendar the other day, and it really helped me. You don't have to study Zen Buddhism, by the way. He says Zen Buddhism can simply be summed up in three simple things. Everything changes, everything is connected, so pay attention. Everything changes, relationships end, governments collapse, you name it, slavery ends, freedom emerges. Everything is connected. We're connected to one another. We're connected to the trees, to the turtles, to the air that we breathe. And then pay attention. It's all about paying attention. Because as Jody reminds me, everything is here for us. And so when we pay attention, even the stuff that seems uncomfortable, like the house burning down, but now I can see the moon. The relationship ended, but now I have a relationship with myself. It's all the grace of God, the big reveal. So I invite you to just stop for just a holy instant and sit with intention in your chair and observe your attention as like a pebble that's falling into a pond. And let that pebble fall from your mind, which is a very creative part of our being, and let that pebble descend into your heart space. The Sufis call it the cave of the heart, wherein God lies. And so now our attention is resting in that spacious field of love. It's an unconditional love, a love that doesn't have rules or preferences. It's just a love that is. And could we let our life be impelled by love? Let love lead the way, however that might manifest in our world of circumstance. And so when the fire of circumstance presents itself to us, and it will, could we let the fire of our aliveness, of the love that we are, from the soul of our being, respond? Not with an I'm going to fix it idea, not with it's wrong and it needs to change, but with a response that says, I'm going to be present with you as an embrace of the divine. And then we open to the embrace of the divine, the aliveness of spirit. In the Hawaiian shamanic tradition, they have only three simple rules. One of them is aloha. Aloha is the consciousness that we are all the breath of God. aloha. Their second concept is ohana, that we are the family of God, the community, the sangha. Ohana. We meet in the ohana, the family of the one life. And the third aspect of this shamanic beautiful tradition is ho'oponopono. When I identify the wholeness in myself, I see the wholeness in you. Because truly, it's all a hidden wholeness underneath the appearance of discord. And so we come into this sacred space to feel the breath of spirit within us in a community of open hearts, awakened minds, and willing bodies, so that we might ho'oponopono the world. We might call forth a world living in peace by finding the peace within. This is the great reveal. When we find peace in our hearts, we'll find peace in the world. When we find wholeness at the core of our being, we'll see wholeness in the world unfolding. When we find that unconditional loving presence as our own self, then everyone will become a loving reflection of that love. Touch your heart, feel the Father within that doeth the work, the Abba, the Beloved, and join with me in the heart salutation as we say to this divine presence within ourselves, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of my soul. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
In this spaciousness we are one.
In this spaciousness we are one.
And now open your eyes, which are the windows to the soul. Open your hearts really wide. Open your hands and let your light so shine that the darkness seeth it not. Thank you for sending in your tithes, everyone. Happy Father's Day, all you dads out there. And happy Father's Day to the Father within all of us.
Thank you.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, visit our website at www.cslhuntsville.org.